Tua.
Fires. Touchdown, Miami. Waddle snuck into the end zone of Miami.
Boy, tight throw, tight window. They had to get that touchdown on that play to get it.
What is up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast, part of the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network, covering your team, your Miami Dolphins. How's it going, everybody? I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and on today's show, the Top 5 series continues rolling along as we break down Andrew Van Ginkle's Top 5 plays of 2021. We'll keep previewing the Senior Bowl roster by looking at the running backs, another loaded group here, and we'll tell you why Miami's position-by-position allocation creates flexibility, and who wouldn't want flexibility in a prospective head coaching search? All of that and more. From somewhere in South Florida, this is the Drive Time Podcast.
That's another Miami Dolphins.
And we have some news to kick off the show today. Two more futures contracts to announce. Running back Jared Doakes and defensive back Quincy Wilson were added to the Dolphins via future contracts. You all know about Doakes, a 7th-round pick last April, still awaiting his NFL debut. But Quincy Wilson, you draft heads will know the name, a former 2nd-round pick from Florida to the Colts. He spent time with the Jets and Giants after that, and now he's coming home. A Fort Lauderdale native gets a chance with the Miami Dolphins. A very physical, long press type of cornerback. 2 career picks, 62 tackles. He's played 32 games and made 11 starts. Speaking of news, we haven't heard a whole lot on the coach search front this week, but we did get an update from Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, who clarified Miami's interview schedule this week, earlier this week on Twitter. And by the time you hear this, each of these reported interviews will either be completed, ongoing, or on the immediate horizon. Just depends on when you listen to the podcast here on this Friday. So this from Cam Wolf. On Monday, the Dolphins met with Brian Daboll and Leslie Frazier of the Buffalo Bills, who of course play this weekend on Sunday night at Kansas City. And then Wednesday, the Dolphins met with Mike McDaniel of the 49ers. They're still playing too. They'll see the Packers on Saturday night. What a great game that is. The entire weekend. I can't wait for this weekend's slate of games. We'll pick those games here later on. Thursday, Dan Quinn and Kellen Moore of the Cowboys both played their last game of the season this previous weekend. Their seasons are now over. And then Friday, Vance Joseph, the Cardinals were eliminated on Monday by the Rams, who have our final candidate in this report. Thomas Brown will also interview on Friday. He has a game on Sunday against the Buccaneers. So that is where we stand right now. And you know, last week we covered the young talent on the roster, the remaining years of said talent and their current contracts they possess. And we talked about the depth at so many areas on the football team and the idea that the attractiveness of the job to prospective head coaches comes from the talent inherent on the roster. And not to mention, hey, you want to live where you never have to use an ice scraper on your car windshield, a place where people from all over the world come to vacation year-round? But in addition to the talent on the roster, we also look at the overall construction of the roster. And this is something I really became fascinated by back in my Locked On Dolphins days. Roster allocation, contract flexibility, potential addition opportunities, that sort of thing. And so to go over this right now and kind of take inventory of the positional spending as well as resources at our disposal this offseason. And you know, the Dolphins' flexibility has been really created over the last couple of years as they transitioned, as Mr. Ross mentioned back in 2019 about doing the same thing over and over again, getting some of those older players off the roster in place of younger players and getting yourself in a flexible future cap position. The Dolphins have executed that plan as well as anybody else in the National Football League the last few years, and that's why they're in the spot we are going to talk about right now. And this comes from, is it SpotRack? Is it Spotrac.com? I don't know how to pronounce it, but with an accounting for contracts set to expire in March, you know, the new league year, here's a look at where the Dolphins rank in terms of their positional spending or cash committed by position for 2022. At quarterback, 27th most cap committed. That's 14.2 mil under the average, league average. At running back, 29th most cap committed in 2022. That's 6.1 million under the league average. At wide receiver, 18th most committed. That's 1.2 million under average. Tight end, 21st, 2 million under league average. Offensive line, 28th, $16.8 million under league average. On the defensive side, the defensive line, 27th, $15.8 million under league average. And think about the production you have there too. I mean, what a clinic on maximizing resources at a particular position group, not to mention what we've already talked about countless times here on Drive Time, the fact that Wilkins, Sealer, and Davis have multiple years remaining, and Adam Butler's here for another year as well. Depth and good players across the board there. Linebacker, 26th most cap commitments here in 2022, $13.3 million under league average. Defensive back, third most cap commitments, 24 over the league average, and you could argue that's the best secondary in the National Football League, certainly in the upper echelon, and if you consider the fact that your two safeties are on rookie contracts, I should say your two safeties who played the most snaps under rookie contracts in Brandon Jones and Javon Holland, that's what we're talking about here, how you offset the spending of an Xavien Howard and Byron Jones' contract with players like Javon Holland and Brandon Jones. What a perfectly balanced positional group that is with the way those contracts are brought in. That's kind of what we're talking about here in terms of how you do this. We'll get to that point here in just 1 second. To finish up there, though, the specialist, 18th highest cap commitments for 2022, $0.6 million under league average. So one position over the league average, and most of them significantly under. And like we said, with inherent talent at every single spot. And back to the defensive back balance with Holland and Jones compared to other Jones, Byron Jones and Xavien Howard. And you've got Eric Rowe in there as well. Nick Needham's contract not on the books, obviously, because he is a restricted free agent coming up here at the end of the season. And then also Justin Coleman, a free agent there. But you get the idea of how you kind of fill out the rest of that group because you have the high price guys, the rookie contract guys, and a couple of middle of the road guys there as well in terms of how their contracts weigh out. That's ideal, right? So like you're the receiver position, your top target already, probably your number one receiver, unless something crazy happens, you know, a big time acquisition. And I just, even then, like Waddle, you know how highly I think about him, has a very good chance of being your top receiver this next season. He's heading into year two of a 4-year deal with a 5th-year option on a rookie contract price. So you have flexibility there to plop in a veteran if you need to do that. At running back, you have very little invested in future contracts there. At tight end, kind of the same thing in terms of having, you know, one young piece in that group with Hunter Long and minimal commitments. I think we all expect a bit of a progression here this year from Hunter Long. Along the offensive line, that's where it's most interesting to me because you have essentially an entire group on rookie contracts right now where you still, like with Hunter Long, like with Jalen Waddle, like with any other rookie or second-year player even, you expect growth each year, right? And Rob Hunt has really played his way into that kind of set-and-forget mentality. The dude allowed 2 quarterback pressures over the last 6 games, according to Pro Football Focus. Did something similar last year in his rookie year. I think you feel pretty good about where he's heading. And I also think we saw upward trajectory with Liam Eikenberg, Austin Jackson, and Michael Dieter. I know they had struggles at certain points, but again, we've talked about development so many times in this podcast. It's okay to expect growth. If they don't do it, then you can kind of have your concerns then. But you expect growth from players at that stage of their career. You also had that Week 18 start, very encouraging from Robert Jones. Solomon Kilney was in a reserve role all year, but much like Michael Dieter in 2020, don't just forget about him. He's still there. So my point there, all of those guys' positional versatility, I mean, I think every single one of those players we just mentioned can play multiple spots. Their projected growth in terms of where they are in their career and minimal cash commitments there, you're so flexible in how you approach that position this offseason. I don't know how it's going to go down, but I can't wait to see how it goes down. We already mentioned the defensive line position, and that's great. You've got your linebacker, you've got your young, dynamic leader there in Jerome Baker for the foreseeable future, and then another budding young player who's oozing with traits and frankly already producing to match at Jalen Phillips. And then you also have Andrew Van Ginkel producing big time on his rookie deal. At defensive back, expensive, but worth every damn penny, and probably not a ton of work to be done there. I mean, I think Chris Greer said it best, that you're constantly searching for ways to make the roster better, and that includes every position. But at defensive back, you're pretty well set up right there. But again, you can still always look to make improvements. We thought Javon Holland was maybe overkill. I wouldn't say overkill. Maybe that was the perception, but look how that turned out. Like, that potential perception was squashed because he's already a young star in this league. And then at the specialist group, still under average while having the guy that scores the most points on your team secured for the long term. And Jason Sanders is one guy I'm not going to worry about. Like, it was a down year for him in terms of his production, but I don't worry about that guy because I've seen his process and I've seen how accurate he is daily when it comes to how he kicks the football. So that gives you a total of the lowest committed cap in the National Football League for 2022. $45.8 million below league average cap commitments at this current time. And that's from SpotRac, and that can be, you know, fluctuating either way in terms of how those contracts are structured. Every single deal is unique. And I just want to give you a comparison where the rest of the teams in that territory, in terms of fewest cap commitments for the upcoming season, where they finish this season in the win column. Miami has the most available cap money, cap space. 9-8 was their record. Second most, they were 10-7 in a playoff team. But then from there, the third most, 4-13. Then the fourth most was 9-8. And then your fifth most cap space this offseason was 3-14, with the sixth most cap space team, 4-13 this past season. So most of those teams are trying to really kind of reconstruct their roster to be in that competitive playoff race portion of the National Football League. Three were not, four definitely are. And there's a stark difference between 9-10 wins and the 3-4 win teams, right? Plus a first-round draft pick this year, obviously, and then two first-round draft picks in 2023, and a team that was one game away from the playoffs each of the last two seasons, and really that talented young core and their expected trajectory with the majority of the roster being these young, more recently acquired players, you know, logical thought would say that they would show growth and development and give you even more internal growth and improvement. So that, with the fact that you won 10 games and 9 games the last 2 years, with available cap space and with the future draft capital, you know, I talk all the time about Miami's flexibility, and this isn't to make any suggestions, but rather just to say the position the Dolphins are in and what they can present to prospective head coaches and say, can you and the front office team up to use these resources to A, get us over that hump, get the pieces that you and your staff need to get us that extra victory? And that's what I think is so great about the flexibility. Do you need a free agent at this spot? Well, guess what? We have only, you know, this contract at this spot, so we can spend there if you need to do that. We can budget that. Oh, you want an immediate impact veteran who's currently with another club, but maybe there's a possible trade interest out there? Like, for instance, look at all the veterans who have changed teams from premium draft picks or for premium draft picks the last couple of years. Orlando Brown this past season with Kansas City. Rodney Hudson was a big get for a playoff Cardinals team the last offseason. It's every single year. Just listen to some of the highlights from each year, and this excludes three or four names every year. 2020, Stephon Diggs, are you kidding me? He was like an MVP candidate that year if it wasn't for the quarterbacks always getting it. DeAndre Hopkins had the same impact for the Cardinals. Trent Williams is the best left tackle in football. He helped the Niners really get that offensive line cranking and go to a Super Bowl that season. DeForest Buckner for the Colts. Hell of a player. One of the best interior defensive linemen. Rob Gronkowski. He did get the Bucs a Super Bowl championship. 2019. Jalen Ramsey. Marcus Peters. What? Those are top line corners. 2018. Khalil Mack. Probably the best pass rusher in the NFL at that time. Trent Brown also got dealt that offseason. What I'm ultimately saying is you've got options which could help you get to point B, which is build a sustained winner that can continue growth while adding pieces. And look, we all want that extra win and to get into the tournament, right? We all would love that. But ultimately, you want more than that. So not settling for just getting over the hump. How do we get over the hump and keep going up from there? And then point C, maintain that funnel of growth and future assets. That part is a little bit more difficult to do and definitely to forecast at this stage, but it's important because, as Mr. Ross says and has made clear multiple times, we're not looking for a one-year pop-up that washes back into obscurity. The right candidate will find success and sustain it. I cannot wait to see how it all plays out and how it all happens. Let's go ahead and take our first break and pick it back up with our new top five segment focusing today on edge rusher Andrew Van Ginkle. Back here on the Drive Time Podcast, and we are diving into the B block by taking a look at the top five plays of linebacker Andrew Van Ginkle's 2021 season. And I'll be honest, these are a lot harder to find, not because there was a shortage of plays by Gink, he had a monster year, but there's no catalog of Like, for instance, one play is a pass breakup here against the Colts that I just happened to remember from my rewatching the games back in September, but there's no searchable way to find specific Van Ginkle plays, and Game Pass used to have every play description on the sidebar, plus you could search situational plays, including individual players, but alas, so what I'm trying to say is, if you remember anything that I left off, please, please hit me up on Twitter and let me know. I want this to be as comprehensive as possible. Let's go ahead and get to Geeks Real, and it starts in coverage against the Colts in week number 4.
Mo Alie-Cox, who last year started to become a little bit more of a threat in the passing game, a big catch here as we hit the 3-minute mark in the quarter. Wentz taking a shot, end zone, and it's incomplete. Going right back to Mo Alie-Cox. Well covered by Andrew Van Ginkle. A couple of big bodies battling in the end zone.
That was a nice play. Mo Alie-Cox has an opportunity. A good ball by Carson Wentz. A clean pocket. He just needs to go up and elevate and catch that ball. Wasn't able to bring it in.
And so you heard not a lot of excitement there on the broadcast call because it was just kind of a run-of-the-mill first down play. But I wanted to highlight that play because I think it exemplifies Van Ginkle's multifaceted skill set. I've raved about this since he was a Wisconsin Badger, and it's only gotten better for him as a pro. The Colts run double Ys. That means two inline tight ends to the same side of the formation. So 12 personnel, unbalanced, Y tight end in close to the formation. Two of those guys, double Ys, and that's two Ginks side of the formation. And you see him check with Eric Rowe, who's also over there. And I'm not sure exactly what the call was, obviously. Maybe they banjo that thing, I don't know. But the result is Mo Alie-Cox, Colts tight end, offset, attached to the line of scrimmage, and the other tight end, I think it was Kylan Granson? They were down a couple tight ends that week. He releases into the route first, and Rowe picks him up, and then Ginke engages Alie-Cox, who tries to power through the reroute, and he does get on top of Van Ginkle, but that's where you see the recovery speed and then the football IQ. It's a first and 10 from the plus 23-yard line, 3 minutes to play in the first half, Dolphins nursing a 3-zip lead, and Wentz takes a shot into the end zone. And the thing I love is that there was no panic from Van Ginkle. He just gets to a spot like an outfielder in baseball where you don't put the glove up and you don't find the baseball. You just run to a spot and then you try to locate it from there, puts the paw up and then makes the play at the catch point right where Mo Alie-Cox puts his hands up to go for the catch. That quiet hands idea, Van Ginkle does the exact same thing and matches the quiet hands because if your hands go up, you're going to run slower. Splits the hands, incomplete pass. I just love having an absolute disruptor of a pass rusher slash run defender who can also peel back and run step for step in man coverage 25 yards downfield the opposite direction. Play number 5 from Van Ginkle. Number 4, the flowing blonde locks of Andrew Van Ginkle in the passing lane once again, this time in New Orleans.
No safety right off the bat. 7-0. 7-0.
Here they come. Book able to get rid of it. It's picked off. Intercepted. Nick Needham into the end zone for the pick 6. Touchdown, Miami. Andrew Van Ginkle got a piece to deflect it. And that's how it starts for young Ian Book.
And you might say that's a Nick Needham play, Travis. And it is. Of course, he scores a touchdown, but I don't think it happens without Gink's work on this play. You heard the broadcast crew mention it there, and this is just a feature of the Dolphins' front under Austin Clark, getting the hands up and trying to find a way to impact the passing game when you don't get home in the pass rush, and nobody had more batted balls at the line than the Miami Dolphins. But in order to ensure that the offensive lineman doesn't snatch you and pull you down or get a rack of your ribs or punish you for getting elevation, you have to create space there. So Van Ginkle drops his rush right into his man, but he also has his eyes on Ian Book to see the quick setup and the quick game as the ball comes out quickly there and uses his length to create that space, to elevate, gets a finger on the pass, and we're up 7-0 to kick off Monday Night Football. Number 3, that's a pretty athletic quarterback he just chased all over South Florida.
The crowd has come alive here at Hard Rock Stadium. Wilson on the run. Got to get rid of it. And down the sideline and incomplete.
Well, they're going to try and block
Van Ginkle coming off the edge with Ryan Griffin, and it's just not going to happen. Again, he just doesn't really have the angle. And off of the play-action pass, Van Ginkle is just going to walk down Zach Wilson, and now he just has to try and scramble and get rid of the football.
And you don't hear a lot of excitement there in the voice or the call at the particular moment, because I thought that play deserved more recognition than what we heard on that call right there. It's the first play for the Jets after the Dolphins had just tied the game up 17-all, and they run a trap where you get a tight end and guard coming across to the strong side, which is Andrew Van Ginkle's side. But it's play action with Zach Wilson booting away from Gink's side back to the weak side. And he gets on his horse, Van Ginkle does, as he's reading the blocking keys. And you see the Jets tight end come across in that split zone action, that trap action, and he slows up in his approach to Van Ginkle, which means pass blocking, right? Because if he were in run action, he's going to try to run through the four and the three on Van Ginkle's jersey and get that surge, that push. So you see Gink swipe the hands and turn the corner before Wilson even has had the opportunity to carry out his fake. And as he tries to peel back, he realizes the pursuit of Van Ginkle is going to catch up to him. So he puts his foot in the ground and turns back the other way. And I can't say enough how impressive it was. Like, Van Ginkle is already retracing his steps as he puts his foot in the ground to change directions. Like, Wilson's only path to safety is to further retreat back towards the goalpost. This play starts at the 25-yard line. By the time he throws the football away, he's on the goal line. Like, think about that. 25 yards of pursuit where he goes from basically one side of the numbers, like he was outside the hash marks, all the way back to the other side of the numbers in the field. So Gink starts this play in Boca Raton, runs down to Homestead and back up to Sunrise by the time it all finishes. What a play it was. Number two for Andrew Van Ginkle in 2021. I promise we're going to get into splash plays here soon, but not here. Van Ginkle continues to show his ability to impact the game in all phases against the Panthers. And we're going to play the audio for you here, despite the lack of enthusiasm because of comprehensive sake. Here you go. Andrew Van Ginkle against the Panthers in the second quarter.
McCaffrey, and now Miami knows that at least when it comes to Cam Newton trying to air it out, they've come away with a couple of takeaways. Zach Sealer, who's been terrific for Miami versus the run. Can you come back in this game with
it? So you hear Zach Sealer make the stop there, but the part about this play that I love is it shows the complementary nature of this defense. Again, I apologize. I didn't even mention Van Ginkle on the broadcast there. Because you have Zach Sealer playing defensive end, and he is capable of whipping tackles and guards and centers alike across from him. Doesn't matter who you put in front of him. He can win those matchups any day of the week. And Van Ginkle draws a tight end one-on-one, and they're going to try to get Christian McCaffrey working to that side, to the outside, or rather to that side of the formation, on a little bit of inside zone action, and Sealer dominates his guy. But you watch the Panthers tight end get stood straight up and retreat backwards in order to try to regain control of the rep and get his footing back under control, because Van Ginkle has basically Rock'em Sock'em Robot jacked him up at this point, and there's no dice for him there to re-anchor. McCaffrey tries to bounce because of Sealer's whim, and there's Van Ginkle, who after stacking at the tight end, chucks him out of the building and jumps on the Panther back for a tackle for loss. All right, number one, we get to the splash play here as Van Ginkle gets to his man, Mac Jones, and gets him on the turf.
Good point. Patriots clinching, by the way, their victory in Jacksonville last week.
Here they come again. Jones never had a chance. Andrew Van Ginkle.
Van Ginkle just came right around the corner there.
And with a 17-7 lead at the two-minute mark of the first half, Gink shows you more of the athletic ability. The New England left tackle tries a vertical set to match the get-off speed by number 43, but it's just too late. And his two-point stance with a tight end to that side of the formation, so a longer angle to go to the quarterback, he throws the speed rush upfield, and you see that tackle attempt to get Gink's left shoulder to get that punch on him and just disrupt him enough to help his quarterback out there a little bit, but he dips right underneath the punch and doesn't lose acceleration. And this is my top play because I think that's exactly what makes him a good pass rusher. The ability to dip without losing acceleration around that corner makes you a really good edge rusher when you can do that. He turns a 2nd and 10 into a 3rd and 18, and the Dolphins get the stop and get the ball back to the offense and have a chance to extend their 10-point lead at the halftime break. So those are your top 5 Van Ginkel plays of 2021. I know there's more splash plays out there, but I wanted to exemplify his entire game. I think these plays do that, and we'll keep doing this as we go along. Check back on Monday to see who's going to be our subject of our top 5 plays on that episode. On the other side here, we're going to take a look at the 9 running backs who will be heading to Mobile for the Senior Bowl. Drive Time Podcast, Travis Wingfield, Friday, January 21st. Back here on the Drive Time Podcast presented by Auto Nation, and I want to go ahead and continue our Senior Bowl preview look ahead with the roster and take a look at the running backs. And once again, this class is loaded, man. Jim Nagy, the talent he's attracted to Mobile over the last few years, it's just made draft season even better. And just like with last year with Najee Harris and Michael Carter, Ramondre Stevenson, Khalil Herbert, 4 backs who came into the league and had productive rookie seasons, I think there's another crop of guys here who could do the exact same thing. And we start with the American team and running back Brian Robinson Jr. from Alabama. And stop me if you've heard this before, 6'1", 228 pounds, just another Alabama back. And the thing about these Bama backs is they seemingly always play their role within a committee early in their career and even in the regular season of that final year. But then they get brought out of the proverbial hermetically sealed packaging just in time for the college football playoffs. And what a nice luxury it is to know you're going to be there every single year and just unleash those fresh legs and power on some poor, unassuming defenders. We saw it with Josh Jacobs a couple years ago. Didn't have the college resume so much, but those playoff games showed you his potential and proved that just because he didn't have the production in college didn't mean he wasn't capable of doing it at the next level. And Brian Robinson Jr. never surpassed 100 attempts until 2021. Then he had 270 this past season for 1,336 yards and 16 total touchdowns. Now, 204 of his 272 college football playoff rushing yards came against the Bearcats, and Ann Nolan's national champion Georgia Bulldogs held him to just 3.1 yards per carry. But that's a professional back right there. A short yardage conversion machine, good vision and feel to prevent defenders from squaring him up. And if you don't square him up, you will not win on your own. You got to get bodies to the party to tackle this guy. He has a tremendous sense of contact balance. He had 1 fumble his entire career, and Alabama coaches praise his ability to execute his job and not make mistakes. Now, he wasn't involved in the passing game like at all. But as we learn seemingly every single draft cycle, that doesn't mean a prospect can't do it just because they were not asked to do it. That's what I'll watch for at Senior Bowl practices with Robinson Jr. Kind of the case for a lot of these guys, actually. Florida Internationals, Devontae Price will be there. Not as familiar with his game, though he is in our backyard here, but that's what the All-Star game is all about. The small school guys that make a name for themselves. 6'2", 215, 5th-year senior. Another one of these built backs who has a great lower body build. I mentioned Stevenson from last year's game, and the intriguing part of his game, as well as Price's game, is the combination of power and long speed. That's where Price, well, the Price is Right, Bob. Heyo. This position, I think, is the one that the game itself provides the most value for. Like in the preseason, watching running backs is always the most important position on the field for me because how they run in game situations that you cannot simulate in practice is a big deal to me. I'm curious to see how he runs on Saturday in addition to his work in the drills throughout the course of the week. Also in Florida, a much bigger school with the Gators, Damian Pierce. We stay up in-state here up in Gainesville for Damian Pierce. We mentioned Price as a load. Well, Pierce is the same weight at 215, but he's 4 inches shorter. A wrecking ball, a sturdy lower half with a tremendous center of gravity, a true grit, hard-nosed worker. He's the kind of guy you draft and develop everything around him, but you'll know immediately that he'll compete in pass protection and on special teams. And if he gives you some short yardage work on offense too, that's the exact type of day 3 pick you want to invest in. We talk all the time about extra yardage through contact. That's Pierce's game. Georgia, James Cook, speaking of the Bulldogs, this might be my favorite back in the class in terms of just pure entertainment watching him on Saturdays. It's hard to not see his brother in his game. They look identical for starters, but the explosiveness is there for Dalvin Cook's kid brother, James. The part I love is that you can flex him out, and if the defense responds with a linebacker, well, you've got a go route that's probably going to be open because he can just completely burn by that linebacker. And that's where the real intrigue starts for me. We saw it all playoff long. Takeoff routes, wheel routes from the backfield, the coveted Texas route from the backfield. But he can also run routes as a true split-out wide receiver, which obviously expands your empty package, your 11 personnel empty package. He's also got the natural feel that his brother has in terms of running to daylight. He finds creases and hits them. Tremendous vision between the tackles and the urgency to get there before backers can scrape or a two-gapping defensive lineman can disengage and get him to the ground. Right now, he's catching mid-round buzz, but I would not be shocked at all if he climbs into the discussion of the top backs in this class, or at least right on the fringe of that discussion. From the national squad, Arizona State's Rashad White. This guy's a baller, man. The show goes on here with more pass-catching standouts. White was the vast majority of ASU's offense this year, a team that has as much NFL profile to them as anybody in college football with Herm Edwards at the controls. He's a smooth mover, man. He can jump two gaps in a hurry, kind of like we talked about with Duke Johnson. Like, I got to get over to that C gap. Let me hit a quick jump cut. He can get over there quickly and change all the angles in one quick motion. He's a scheme-diverse back with breakaway speed to hit the explosive runs. You know how much I care about that. He pairs that with real angry runs type of temperament. He's among that group of backs we just mentioned for James Cook, among a lot of the draft nicks, a potential high pick this upcoming April. Michigan's Hassan Haskins will be in Mobile. Speaking of competitive runners, you saw what Haskins did in the big game this year, right? You know, stop me if you've heard this before, and maybe this is the way of the future with how backs are valued in 2022, but he's another power speed guy, a straight jackhammer who runs behind his pads as well as anybody, but he also has the juice in the second level, like we saw against Ohio State, for instance, to finish runs in the paint, in the end zone. Basketball star in high school, high jump state champion, or second place in state in high school as a high jumper, and you see that explosiveness from the high jump translate into the way he uses leg drive to make tacklers bounce off of him. Missouri's Tyler Batty, that's a name, and now we get a change of pace back on the board in Batty, 5'8", 195, electric speed to the perimeter, and acceleration to turn any touch into a long touchdown. He ran a heavy dose of stretch and outside zone, where they kind of let him open up that speed, a true slasher-style runner. Cannot wait to see him in one-on-ones in the passing game here in Mobile. Baylor's Abram Smith also on the roster. He's a linebacker turned running back turned linebacker. In high school, he played running back, went to linebacker at Baylor. Then Matt Rhule goes to the NFL, flips back to the running back position, and he captured that role and did not look back. Another one of these downhill runners who seeks out contact. Again, want to see how he runs in the game on Saturday to get a good feel for his game against some other pro talent. And then Cincinnati's Jerome Ford, a transfer from Alabama. Ford became the feature back this year with Jared Doakes leaving for the NFL. He's a short yardage and goal line maven, runs with power and good vision. Another one of these backs that didn't feature much in the passing game. So that's what I want to see in practices. How does he do in those one-on-ones? Awesome draft class here for the running backs. Can't wait to see where these guys go in the National Football League. Playoff picks this week. Just 3-3 a week ago. That's not good. But most of all, I just want to see some classic playoff games, man. I think this weekend is going to give us a minimum of two classic playoff games. Give me the Titans over the Bengals. Give me the Bills over the Chiefs. So that gives us the Titans-Bills AFC Championship game. And Tennessee beat Buffalo, I think, each of the last 2 years. The Packers over the 49ers. That would solidify our draft pick, I believe, at 25 if that happened. And the Rams over the Bucks for the upset there. So we'll have a Rams-Packers NFC Championship game if my picks go correctly. So that's on the docket. And one last thing, just kind of shoehorn in here. I made a nostalgia discovery today. Tony Hawk Pro Skater soundtracks. Y'all familiar with those? Go back and check those out. You 90s kids, I'm sure, will love those. I am completely inundated with old, early 2000s punk rock right now. Good times ahead. Get in the mailbag up on Twitter for Monday's show. We'll recap the divisional round weekend on that podcast, answer your questions, keep the senior preview series rolling, as well as our top five series here on Drive Time. But in the meantime, that's going to be my time. You all please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating, leave us a review. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Wingfield NFL. Follow the Miami Dolphins on all social platforms at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank podcast. They had Larry Chester on this week with Seth and OJ. Our YouTube channel for Dolphins Day with myself and Joanna Torres. And of course, MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up, Caroline. Daddy is coming home.